Nowadays, Celtic are a world-famous club. But it took some decades for the boys to first leave Europe and travel further afield. In May and June 1931, the boys made their way to the United States and Canada for a six-week tour. This included some very memorable moments in Celtic history, and even led to the signing of a new player under tragic circumstances. This is the story of that tour. Season 1930-31 had been one of mixed success for the Celts. They lost out to Rangers in the Glasgow Cup and Charity Cup, the latter because of having had fewer corner kicks following a 2-each draw. The league had also provided much frustration. Celtic eventually finished 2 points behind the Ibrox team at the top of the table. The final 10 matches had transformed the season. The boys had led, but then lost one and drew 4 of these fixtures, whilst at the same time, Rangers enjoyed 9 wins and a draw to take the title. The Scottish Cup proved to be a different story altogether. In April 1931, Celtic faced Motherwell in the final at Hampden Park. The Well led by 2 goals with 8 minutes remaining, but a stunning fight back gave the boys another chance in a replay. Celtic won this second game 4-2 to claim their 13th Scottish Cup. This achievement buoyed the club as they prepared for the trip of a lifetime. In Celtic's opening years, games had been limited to Scotland, England and Ireland. In 1904, the first trip out with these locations took place as they went to Austria and Bohemia. In the subsequent years, France, Germany and Scandinavia were added to the travel list. At various times, there had been suggestions the Celts would go even further than this. The journey across the Atlantic was one that numerous Irish and Scots had previously made, not least in the 1800s when fleeing famine and poverty. Now Celtic would follow in these footsteps. They were not the only ones needing passports. Other Scottish clubs made their own foreign trips at this time, including Motherwell, who sought to forget their cup final loss by going to South Africa, and Partick Thistle, who headed for Denmark. On the 13th of May 1931, the Celtic party, which included players such as Jimmy McGrory, Jimmy McStay and John Thompson, went to York Hill Quay in Glasgow's West End. They were joined by thousands of fans who had come to wave off their heroes. Various club officials travelled too, and Celtic manager Willie Maley's brother Tom was later invited to join them. There was another very special guest that went to the USA, the Scottish Cup. Celtic took with them the prize that they had claimed the previous month to display as they journeyed around the continent. The ship that carried the Celts over the water was the Anchor Line's SS Caledonia. Built at Lint House on the Clyde, she had been launched in April 1925, just days after the so-called Patsy Gallagher final when Celtic beat Dundee to claim that season's Scottish Cup. During World War II, the Caledonia was requisitioned as an armed merchant cruiser and renamed HMS Scotsdale before being sunk by a German U-boat in June 1940. The noise of pipers, sirens and even cannons echoed not simply around York Hill Quay, but at various locations down the Clyde. At different points on the river, more supporters watched and cheered as the ship made its way for the Americas, following a stop in Ireland. 4 decades beforehand, the first attempt to lure Celtic across the broad Atlantic had failed due to fears that there was limited interest in football. By the 1930s, it was believed that this had changed, despite the ongoing economic strife of the Great Depression. To make it worthwhile, the Celts were going to be busy. Across 5 weeks, 14 games would be scheduled, although one would be cancelled eventually. The Celtic party would become well acquainted with the American train system as they travelled to numerous locations to play. The experience of Atlantic travel may have left some Celts wishing the club had continued to refuse stateside invitations. Fog and choppy waters was found to be a bit trying by some of the party, according to Celtic boss Willie Maley, who said he was feeling much better after arriving in America. The crowds that greeted them in New York surely helped improve the mood. For the next few weeks, Celtic's main accommodation was the Knights of Columbus Club in Brooklyn, New York. Despite alcohol being banned during Prohibition in the USA, the players were still able to get beer in the club, as well as making use of the on-site swimming pool. At various other times, the boys were on the move, going to Philadelphia, Boston, Rhode Island, Chicago, Detroit, and Baltimore, as well as two trips to Canada. Within hours of arriving, Celtic's American playing experiences were underway. The boys went to Yellow Jacket Field in Pennsylvania and had a comfortable 6-1 victory over the Pennsylvania All-Stars. This stadium suffered a devastating fire later that same year. The game was clear evidence of how popular Celtic's visit was going to be. Willie Maley kept a tour diary where he described events and stated that a deputation met us with two outriders who steered us through all traffic, by horn, whistle or wave of the hand pushing all traffic to the side. A Scots pipe band marched Celtic round the field with the Scottish Cup before the game. Given the lowly nature of US football in this era, the places where the Celts would play were generally American football or baseball stadia. This was the case the next day when Celtic were in action at the Polo Grounds in New York. 30,000 crammed in to watch the Hoops claim a 3-2 win over the New York Giants. This raised what was then record gate receipts for a match at this venue. After this game, there was almost a week of rest time for the travelling Scots. At different times, they used the tour as a chance for sightseeing and some relaxation. One night they had a trip to the boxing and saw heavyweight Primo Carnera fight, and the Italian later came to watch one of the Celts matches. 6 days after the previous tie, it was time to get back into playing action. The club travelled to Boston via a steamer on the Hudson, viewing famous sites such as the Empire State Building as they did so. They were headed for the world-famous baseball ground, Fenway Park, home of the Boston Red Sox. This time, the game went less well for the visitors, who lost 4-3 to the New York Yankees. The next day came a notable match in Celtic history. The club played Fall River at Mark Stadium in Rhode Island. Unusually for the tour, this was actually a soccer stadium. Celtic lost 1-0 and were impressed by the performance of the opposing goalkeeper, Joe Kennaway. This would later have tragic connections. There was another few days break before continuing the matches. Up to now, the trip had generally been upbeat. The next fixture was anything but, and it was perhaps no shock that it featured Rangers. The Cyclodrome in Rhode Island had been built as a cycling venue, but was used for American football. It also occasionally hosted Pawtucket Rangers. On the final day of May, Celtic faced the Rangers in a hugely bad-tempered fixture, with the referee happy to ignore multiple fouls. This led to furious complaints from Willie Maley. A bumpy and hard pitch also benefited the home side, who enjoyed a 3-1 victory. However, the main talking point was the hostile reception received by the Celts. In fact, one Scottish newspaper later claimed that Glasgow Rangers clearly had an enthusiastic following in the United States. This is perhaps based on the fact that at one point in the game, fans invaded the pitch and Celtic needed a police escort to safely exit the ground. Things were mainly more positive the following day when playing at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. Celtic enjoyed an easy 5-0 victory over Brooklyn Wanderers. One of the American side's forwards was particularly familiar to the Celts. Willie Crilly had played in the Hoops in the 1922-23 season. Another opponent would soon become a teammate. Defender Jimmy Maguire was born in Edinburgh. He did so well against the boys that he returned to Scotland to sign for the club, although never actually made a first team appearance. The downside in this match was that Jimmy McGrory suffered a broken jaw, which had to be rewired. And the man responsible, albeit accidentally, was the new boy, Maguire. McGrory's injury ruled him out of some games, but the Celts scoring machine was still enormously popular with the US public. One newspaper reported that American fans gave presents and have held a dance in his honour, as well as starting the James McGrory Break Club. When almost 1 week had passed, the Celts headed for Canada. They travelled to the baseball stadium in Montreal and faced the Carsteels. This encounter saw 7 Celtic goals without reply, 5 of which came from Peter Scarfe. Amusingly, a kit shortage meant that Scarfe had to play wearing a spectator's silk green shirt. The next day, back in New York, it was one of the tour's most unpleasant experiences. Celtic returned to the Polo Grounds and drew 1-1 with Hakoah All-Stars, a Jewish team. But goals in football was the least of anyone's concern. It had all started so well. A pipe band welcomed the Celts and fans rushed onto the park with a garland of roses saying good luck to the Celtic. Then Jimmy Walker, the mayor of New York, kicked off the game and things turned. Soft refereeing ensured small fouls led to bigger ones and eventually on-field fights. By full-time, four players had been sent off from the referee, two from each side. In fact, Celtic's Charlie Napier, who scored the boys' goal, actually tried to fight with the match official as he was being led from the field. One US newspaper described the Scots as being far from shrinking violets. Before the game, New York's mayor had put forward a trophy as a prize for this match. With the game ending in fighting and a draw, it's not clear what happened to this particular reward. The on-field violence may have added a sour taste to the trip, but America was hardly a country unused to such things. In fact, 2 days later, the notorious mobster Dutch Schultz, known as the Beer Baron, was arrested following a shootout in New York. Therefore, the Celts may have been happy to be heading to Chicago for the next fixture. Playing at the home of the Chicago Cubs baseball team, Celtic faced the interestingly named Bricklayers. There was lots of entertainment for the 11,000 fans who witnessed 9 goals, with the Scots enjoying a 6-3 win. As the days went on, the Celts became more and more tired. The heat in particular proved to be incredibly sapping. One newspaper suggested that the tour's experiences were a mixed grill, owing to the hot weather making it feel like being cooked. It wasn't simply the climate that knackered the Celts. Long journeys were also draining, and each place they went, a civic function such as a banquet was usually held. This forced the team to endure long-winded speeches from local politicians and dignitaries. 4 days later, on the 25th of June, came another small piece of Celtic history. The Celts travelled to Detroit, where they easily swatted aside a Michigan All-Stars team by 5-0. But the main point of interest concerned the location. Playing at the University of Detroit Stadium, this was the first time that Celtic played under proper floodlights. It would be almost 3 decades before these were installed at Celtic Park. It was soon time to return to Canada for one final match. Playing at the Ulster Stadium in Toronto, the Celts beat an Irish Scots team called Ulster United 3-1. Although some players said the most memorable part of this journey was making a detour en route to visit the world-famous Niagara Falls. There was another first for Celtic in late June. The boys played New York Yankees at the famous Yankee Stadium. This was the first time that soccer had been played in the venue, and the Celts enjoyed a 4-1 victory. Celtic certainly recognised one opposition player. Alec McNabb had been a Scottish Cup winner and played for Morton, including being on the losing side when Celtic won the 1918 Army and Navy Fund Cup. McNabb was determined to once again face the boys, even doing so with a bandaged arm following an injury in a previous match. The Yankees had beaten Celtic at the start of the tour, but the longer Celtic were in the US, the more they became accustomed to the heat. Willie Mailey later wrote that, "This was responsible for our first defeat, the New York Yankees beating us 4-3, but a different tale was told when we met the same team 2 days before we sailed for home. By that time, the men were acclimatised and made ample atonement for their earlier defeat." Celtic's final game was scheduled for the 29th of June. It was supposed to be against Newark Americans at the Bear Stadium in Newark, but this was cancelled. Instead, the Hoops closed the tour with a 4-1 win over Canton Soccer Club in Baltimore, although some players preferred instead to head to the cinema. In the main, the tour had been very successful for the Celts. They played 13 matches, winning 10 of these and suffering 3 reverses. The team had scored 48 goals whilst only conceding 18. Aside from some violence and injuries, this was generally a positive experience. Celtic's 1931 voyage was also important in establishing a footballing and club legacy in the Americas. The trip helped promote a sport that was still developing, and it also attracted more supporters for the club, as well as Scottish football, given the presence of the Scottish Cup. Although many Irish Americans knew about the Celts, this trip enhanced this. To this day, there are numerous Celtic supporters clubs across North America. Celtic sailed home on the 1st of July, satisfied with a job well done and an army of new North American fans. They travelled on the Transylvania. In a strange echo of what happened to the Caledonia, on which Celtic had journeyed to the US, the Transylvania was later requisitioned as a war vessel and also sunk in 1940. As with the outward journey, so too the Celts made an Irish stop en route back to Glasgow. This time, however, they returned with one less player. Jimmy McGrory was taken by motorboat from the ship to attend his wedding in Ireland to Veronica Green. The jaw injury he'd suffered on the tour thankfully did not prevent him from being able to say, "I do." And by the time the boys arrived in Glasgow, the scene resembled that which they had departed back in May. Thousands of supporters came to cheer the return of their heroes. In fact, barriers had to be placed at York Hill Quay to stop fans from swamping the players. Those men now had 2 weeks to recuperate until they began pre-season training. Manager Willie Maley wasn't quite finished travelling and headed for the south of England for a short holiday. Celtic's journey to the Americas captured the attention and interest of fans around the world. This continued to be the case after returning to Scotland. Tom Maley went around the country giving lectures, including Dundee and West Lothian, where he described his experiences and showed off photographs taken on the trip. The expedition also included some sad postscripts. James Kelly, who was the club's first captain and later chairman, had been one of the travelling party. It proved to be his final official role for the boys as he died the following February. Even more tragically, September 1931 saw the death of John Thompson. The boys' goalkeeper was killed in an accident during a Rangers and Celtic match. In the end, his replacement in goal was a result of the US trip. Joe Kennaway, born in Canada but with parents from Dundee, faced the hoops when they played Fall River. He made an excellent impression and so was persuaded to make his own Atlantic journey, becoming a mainstay in the team from 1931 to 1939. One final tragic link concerns the Celtic trip. Peter Scarfe was another important player for the Celts, but towards the end of his career had on-pitch breathing problems. Later in 1931, his time in green and white was cut short after he was diagnosed with tuberculosis. He died in 1933, aged just 25. Celtic's 1931 American trip proved to be a momentous event. It featured a litany of stories, including excitement, new players, violence, firsts, and controversy. There was also the presence of tragedy, which hung over many of the Celts who made the journey. The Celtic group had mixed feelings about the tour. They enjoyed the excitement of it, but Chairman Tom White claimed the long journeys, excessive heat and pitches without grass had been difficult to deal with. Manager Willie Maley was especially scathing of the refereeing performances, describing them as terrible. Still, perhaps that should have made the Celts feel right at home. In the longer term, other American visits became an important part of the Celtic story. It would be 20 years before another transatlantic trip was made by the men in green and white. And the 1966 tour is iconic, considered by many to have been the bedrock upon which the success of 1967 was built. New fans, fights with Rangers, floodlights, police escorts, broken jaws, and more than one new player. Celtic's 1931 trip to America and Canada was anything but a dull experience. If you want to learn more about Celtic history, follow Hail Hail History on Twitter X and Blue Sky. You can also take part in free Celtic walking tours. Visit celticwalkingtours.wordpress.com for more information.